because only then can she force the king, for his own good, to also be free like her. He plays on her vanity, her egoism, her need to control her husband. In the great divorce, there's one type of a woman who all her life has controlled her husband and tried to make her and make him into something he never wanted to be. And again, she's ready to drag him from heaven down to hell so she can still, quote, take care of him. In fact, Lewis the moralist often satirized women who, quote, nobly suffered for their families when they knew their families neither needed nor desired such suffering. Lewis had this little joke where he said, look at that woman. She's the type of woman who lives for others. And Lewis would answer, yeah, you can tell by the hunted expression on the people she cares for. And again, it was something that he saw finally as hypocritical. Indeed, such disingenuousness is not only sinful because it hurts others, but because it results in a fatal inward turn that shrivels our human potential. The tragedy queen not only hurts others, she hurts herself by limiting and shriveling her humanity. Let's move on. We saw in Lecture 6 that Lewis believed that the romantic tendency to make a hero out of Milton's Satan was a gross misreading. Well, here he embodies that argument, because here in this novel, Lewis depicts Satan not as a noble, grand sufferer, a romantic hero, but as a spiteful, petty child. Weston, who remember is basically Satan, is not a Promethean sufferer who sacrificed personal comfort for knowledge. Rather, he is an empty shell of a man. Lewis calls him the unman in the novel. Weston is someone who has surrendered his will to a force that seeks not to empower, but to devour his ego. Let me give you an example of how petty Weston is. At one point of the novel, he methodically rips open the bellies of frogs. No reason to do it. It's just spite. Another thing, and again, you'll never forget this if you read the novel, to wear down Ransom, Weston will say, Ransom, Ransom, Ransom. And when Ransom finally says what, he answers nothing. Then he starts again, Ransom, Ransom. He'll say it 1,000 times, Ransom, until he says what? Nothing. And he'll move on. He's petty and spiteful. Lewis's Satan, his Weston, again, almost the same thing, is more dead than alive, more pathetic than tragic. He has no secret knowledge that can make the queen wise. He can only extend his misery. And as you know, misery loves company. That's sort of the motto of hell in some ways. Now, up till this point, it's what you expect. Three rounds of temptation. But then, in an absolutely unexpected twist in the plot, suddenly, after helping the queen resist three rounds of temptation, Ransom realizes that Weston is going to go on tempting the queen no matter how often she rebuffs him. He realizes that if Weston is not stopped physically, that he will rattle on his cold, anti-life logic for all eternity. You pick up what I'm saying? What I'm saying is that Ransom realizes that it is now permissible, nay, imperative, that Ransom not only hate, but kill Weston. Now, this is basically a Christian novel. Suddenly, he feels that he must kill Weston. Now, many of you are saying, what about that Christian idea that you're supposed to love the sinner but hate the sin? But you're missing something here. What you're missing is that Weston has become pure corruption. He is no longer a sinner. He is only a sin. Or to use the language of an earlier lecture, he is no longer just a grumbler. He has become a grumble. And so that Christian injunction is abrogated. Ransom must kill him because all he's killing is a sin. There's no sinner left. The humanity is gone. And so, oddly, the struggle between good and evil reduces itself in the novel to two middle-aged men boxing for their life on a distant planet. And yet, maybe this is not so strange. For as Lewis tells us in Mere Christianity, all in the Bible, all the miracles and covenants and kingdoms narrow themselves finally to a girl at her prayers. The girl, of course, is Mary just before the Annunciation. And Lewis believed, because he believed in free will, that Mary could have said no to God. Mary chose to go through all the, you know, possible death by taking on Christ in her body. And Lewis said that all that wild stuff that happens in the Old Testament, all those historical forces and kingdoms, narrows it down to one poor little rustic girl in the village. That's how God works, Lewis believed.